Now, tell me a little bit about the cemetery outside of Chicago. What's it called? Bachelor's Grove?
Yeah, that's the one, Bachelor's
that's
Grove.
That's the one, okay.
Down in Midlothian, a suburb of Chicago. It's off about, I think, 153rd Street, too. Is that or 147th?
Now, that's supposed to be one of the most haunted places in the world.
That's what they say.
And, you know, do we know how far back those graves go?
They go back to about the mid-19th century, which means the cemetery is about as old as the city of Chicago.
Okay, but really not that old, and not way back.
We're not one of your older cities, Chicago. I mean, you know, people didn't really start dying here in earnest until the mid-19th century. We had, you know, a handful of, we had a handful of people getting killed by the Potawatomi in 1812. And before that, you know, there's plenty of Indian burial grounds from the Potawatomi and here in Wyandotte tribes around the city. But, yeah, you know, people haven't really been settling in this city since the 1840s, 1830s.
I know when we were kids, we always would pick a house in the neighborhood that we thought was creeped out or probably ghostly haunted.
There's one in every town.
Yeah.
There were some in my town when I was a kid, and, you know, I don't think there's barely a house in town that wasn't from any earlier than about 1960. We thought the mall was haunted. That was actually one of the weird things I found out while I was doing research for Your Neighborhood Gives Me the Creeps. The story about the mall in my town was that it had been built on the site of an old monastery, and it was haunted by the ghost of a nun who had become pregnant and been walled up inside of the place or something. It's a story you usually hear in England, where it's kind of like their equivalent of the Indian burial ground story. When you can't come up with a good explanation for a ghost story, that's kind of what people fall back on. But I found out there actually was a monastery on that site.
Well, that's creepy all by itself.
Yeah, it's not something you expect in suburban Des Moines.
You know, Adam, with the so many groups and the so many interests in ghosts and ghost hunting, you would think that, you know, they would bust these stories and, you know, find more hoaxes and things like that. They really don't.
No, not very many of them. Well, especially not on TV. And part of the reason for that is when they find out a story is not true on TV, a lot of times the network will edit it so it looks like they didn't find out that it wasn't true.
Right. Or they won't even air that part of the segment.
Right.
You know, it's kind of anticlimactic if everything they hunted was not real.
Right. Well, you got to remember, when you're doing a ghost hunting TV show, your job isn't necessarily actually to hunt for ghosts. It's to put on a TV show.
True. Tell me a little bit about your work, though, with EVPs in general. Most of them that I've heard from other people, it's very difficult to hear. I mean,
most of them sound like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Absolutely. And then you really got to listen very closely.
Yeah, it takes some imagination. Actually, one of the best ones I got is going back to that tattoo parlor the first night we went out there.
Mm-hmm.
They told us a few things about it, and we were down around the basement of it. You can probably imagine the basement of an old funeral parlor is going to be fairly spooky to start with. But what freaked me out first was just walking down there. You see, the owner of the parlor at the time was a guy by the name of Tapeworm.
Tapeworm?
He had all kinds of, yeah, they called him Tapeworm. He was a tattoo parlor guy. And he told us all kinds of weird stories. He told us about a woman in white that floated up to the counter, which I didn't really believe. And then there was a guy in a brown suit that he'd seen walking around. There was a guy in a powder blue suit that I assume must be the ghost of some poor sap who died in the 1970s. And then he pointed up to the staircase. And I'm going to be cleaning up his language a lot here. But he pointed to the staircase. You guys see that staircase over there? That's what freaks me out, man. That staircase freaks me out because twice, man, I've been walking down those stairs and I felt like somebody was trying to push me, like push me down the stairs, man. So I hear, and this really freaks me out, man, because everybody knows you can't fight back with these cats, right? So here's what I did. I looked up and I said, listen, if I die in this place, man, it is freaking on. And so when we were walking down the stairs, we were all kind of joking like, hey, don't get pushed, don't get pushed. And this girl on the investigation who was a psychic looked over to me and said, the ghosts think this is hilarious. They think it's funny that we're going to get pushed. What she didn't know is that I had, you know, earphones hooked up to my recorder rig. I was picking up a voice that sounded like it was coming up from inside of the walls laughing at us. And especially, it was like a creepy looking laugh too. It was like a love child of Fran Drescher and Krusty the Clown. I can't imitate it that well, but it was like. So that was spooky. Then down in the basement, You know what? It was the basement that first night there. I've been back many times since, and it's never spooked me quite as much as that first night. But we were down there the first night, and I felt over in the corner there was about noticeable temperature drop in the corner. And I kept feeling like somebody was tapping me on the shoulder. I looked over to the girl, and I said, "Do you think there's a ghost here?" And she said, "Oh, yeah." And then she called out, "What's your name?" And just as she said that on the recorder, you can hear a voice go, "Walter."
That's pretty impressive.
That was pretty impressive, yeah. Very rarely do you just get that same kind of that call and response kind of thing.
Do you find the temperatures in these areas that truly could be haunted seems to go down a lot?
I would say so, yeah, especially in places when we get the idea that there's actually something in the room with us. We seem to notice a lot of weird temperature fluctuations, either sometimes colder, sometimes hotter, but certainly it fluctuates. And I kind of wonder sometimes if it's just the temperature fluctuation messing with us that makes us think there's a ghost there. But it does seem like we have more stuff happen when that's going on.
What about basements, Adam? Dirt basements, cement basements, do you see any difference there?
It depends on the location.
How so? What do you mean?
Some places the basement might be haunted. Other times it might, actually be up on the third floor. One of the theories going around is that one of the things that allows ghosts to manifest is the amount of moisture in the air. And, so a basement, a damp, drizzly basement, might just be more of a conducive environment to notice there's a ghost in the room.
Well, that's a good point, too. Do you find that ghosts could generally occur at places of tragedy?
Yes. Yes, it does seem more and more often the places that seem like they might have something to it, it might not just be somebody hallucinating or somebody making up a story. Almost invariably, these locations are places where people have died very suddenly and very tragically, like a spinal injury, trauma to the head, disaster locations, murder sites, things like that. Things where somebody died very suddenly and very suddenly. The guy that I used to work with back when I was a kid, a guy named Seth, grew up to be a physicist. The way he explains it is when somebody dies very suddenly, it's very much an electrical process, this jolt of energy that goes through the body. And when you get into upper-level physics, I guess, it's really all about how that one jolt of energy can leave an impact on the environment basically forever.